friends. You're listening to Draws in Spanish. If you're new here, welcome to the show. I'm your host, Fabiola Lera. I'm a Chilean-American illustrator and podcaster based in Philly. And on this show, I like to chat with Latinx visual artists and designers to talk about their culture and also their creative career. So a little bit of both. In case you missed it, Draws in Spanish is now also available on YouTube as a video podcast. So if you want to watch us talk instead of just listening, be sure to check out my YouTube channel. Just search for Draws in Spanish or click the link in the show notes, whatever you want. Now, today I'm chatting with Colombian creative director and illustrator Daniela Jordan Villaveses. Daniela is a Colombian-born and LA-based creative who has worked with brands like Google, Samsung, Chobani, and was even a part of Target's recent Latine Heritage Month collection. Her work is super colorful, punchy, and full of fun patterns that really draw you in and inject joy into your life. Keep on listening to hear us talk about what it's like growing up in Bogotá, her experience pursuing a degree in printmaking, and her process for creating patterns. Okay, let's get into today's show. Hey, Daniela, welcome to Draws in Spanish. I'm so happy to have you on the show. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing great. I'm so happy too. Thank you so much for this. This is awesome.
Of course, I've been following your work for a while now. I'm not exactly sure how long we've been Instagram mutuals, but it feels like a while. Like, I feel like at least pandemic time, at least.
I was just going to say, I feel like we have a friend in common and we talk about you a lot, even though we're like, I don't think she knows you either in real life, but
what?
Like, oh yeah, Fabiola, like no big deal.
Just cool. I want to know now. They're my friend now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming you guys talk a lot because she does, like, we talk about you like, oh, like she's doing this. Like she did the voting stickers or something, like very familiar with you. Her name is Annie. And she also does social or did social for a while.
Yes.
I think we used to work together and then we were both like, this cool girl, you know, this cool girl. Oh, that's cool. You know, that kind of thing where it's like, oh, I don't think we've ever met, but it's freaking great that we get to now share you, you know?
Yes, that's amazing. I'm so happy. I've never met Annie in real life either. I have another mutual friend with her. So like, and social media back, because I think she did social for Bando and then I did social for Pop Sugar. So we were like social coworkers in a sense. So yeah, I love that. I love that. That's so cute. It makes me so happy.
I know. And we talk about you like so candidly too, which is so great. Because I think I was talking about, maybe we'll get to talking about this at some point, but just kind of like the transition to having everything be video and making sure that like you engage with content and whatever. And she just kind of said, you know who's really good at this? It's Fabiola. And I was like, yeah, but because she puts tons of effort into it and it shows. So we were kind
of talking
about like,
that means
that's
so
a cool way
much
of doing
to me.
It. Yeah. Yeah.
That means a lot to me because I want everyone to know, including you and Annie, that I am trying. Like it's not a casual accidental, like it's not effortless. It requires a lot of effort to
I
show
love
up
it,
with video.
I think part of why I struggle so much with it too is because I feel like a lot of people are just so informal. Like something that on TikTok just catches fire is just like somebody throwing an object on a table. And I'm like, well, I will never do that. I will take so much time. Everything needs to be perfect because that's kind of what social media used to be in a way too. Just like beautifully curated and like you have to show a perfect world. And I'm still kind of in that mode of like, I don't know. Doesn't seem like throwing something is just okay. So we talked about that a little bit too. Just kind of like the shift and the just pace of it all too.
I know. I feel like I agree. I totally agree with you. I think like coming from like the perspective of having done social media for brands, especially, it's like one of those things where you do have to be even extra curated, like it's curated and then it's brand safe, you know? And now even when we do it for ourselves, I still feel stuck in that like curated kind of vibe. More and more as I experiment with doing stuff and realize like nobody cares really, or like it doesn't matter, not that nobody cares, but it doesn't matter how polished it is necessarily. I'm like relaxing with it, but the approach that I like to take, and I forget where I heard this, so I'm taking this from somebody, but I don't know who, was like treat your TikTok or your reels like Instagram stories. And so when I do that, I kind of feel more relaxed. But Reels is not like Instagram stories. People do like crazy stuff on Reels.
Oh, so. I was just going to say, First of all, half the time I treat stories very seriously too, especially if it has to do with work. Like if I'm showing my kid or the dog, yeah, it doesn't matter. But if it's like work related, I'm going to put a lot of thought and care into it. That's the thing too, because you work so hard on like illustration, design, whatever it may be. It's like, well, I'm not just going to phone it in with this last part. I'm showing it to the world. So
I think it's like a double-edged sword of being like a professional and having worked with brands before, especially too. You feel like you know that you can do better, you know, and that there's like a better way to present it, and you get stuck there, but it's not necessarily like always the best thing. So it's very tricky to balance. Okay, but before we get too caught up in that, second at this point, can you give the listeners like an introduction to you and your work for anyone who hasn't seen your work before?
Oh, for sure. So my name is Daniela Jordan Villaveses. I am from Colombia, but I've lived in North America for the past almost 20 years now. So I went to school in Canada and then moved to New York. And 3.5 years ago, I moved to LA with my husband, and we recently had a baby. So I am a mom now too, which is crazy. And then I guess part of what I do for work is just a lot of design and illustration that's really kind of pattern focused, super colorful, super bright. And then just kind of trying to, you know, inspire people, bring them a little bit of joy in their lives. I feel like the world is kind of crushing you at all times, so might as well just try and make the best of it. And what I've been trying to do is kind of like inject a little bit of happiness through my work.
I couldn't agree more. I think your work definitely hits that mark. It's like through color, you're able to inject so much happiness in your works. Like, I feel like the world that your women that you draw live in, and just like the patterns that you make, are so happy and colorful. And like, I guess for me, the word that comes up is like punchy, right? I feel like that is your essence. So I love that you're doing that with your work. And I think, you know, you're hitting your mission is what I'm saying. Like, yes, your work is totally doing that. So I know that you were born in Colombia. Can you tell me like how long you lived there, or just like your life there, or maybe you guys moved really quickly? That's what I want to know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's weird because I've lived a bunch of different places, but I'm just like fully a Colombian person. Like I don't have a lot of, I feel like a lot of the people that you talk to, and this is why it's so cool that this podcast exists, it's because there's like so many different identities with being a Latinx, Latina person. So I think I'm fully Colombian more than anything. I've been a dual citizenship for a while, but at the same time, I'm like, well, no, I'm from Colombia. Nice to meet you. So I lived there most of my childhood and through my teenage years. And then when I moved here, I think I always just made a really conscious effort of, this is great and this is part of my new life, but also like, I'm not just kind of start over, and I can kind of do both at the same time. So kind of still being aware of what's going on, keeping up, not so much with trends and things like that. I feel like a lot of the time people reference TV shows or music, and I'm like, that I've never heard of that. I'm sorry. But more so just like other aspects like politics. I'm like very kind of connected with what's going on, mostly just like throughout the continent too. But just, yeah, making sure that like there's still a very important part of my life is just being a person that's Colombian. But at the same time, I've lived here for so long. My husband is American, and he's like just a very white dude from St. Louis. And now we have a baby that's like half and half. So just kind of learning to live through both of them and like weave them together at times, but also just like understand that they're very different, and sometimes they can kind of commingle really well. And then sometimes they're just like different aspects of life.
I am so happy that you say that, because I think, yeah, like you said, I have interviewed a lot of people from different places. A lot of people do tend to be like squarely in the middle, where they feel, because they've grown up here, they feel very much like, you know, ex-American, right? Mexican-American, or whatever. And I love that you're like, no, I mostly identify with being Colombian, who happens to have lived here in the US for a long time. And that actually was one of my questions, which I was like, is that a weird question to ask? Like, which nationality do you identify with the most? But I'm glad that Colombia is like in you. And it makes a lot of sense too, because you grew up there. So that's like your formational years? Yeah. We don't know. I don't know. <It's okay. laughs> So yeah. That's really cool. So what part of Colombia to be exact?
Oh, I'm from Bogota. So the capital, and very much like, not, it's weird to say, but like more than Colombian, I am like fully a person from Bogota. So I feel like Colombia is super happy, vibrant. Everyone thinks like we're so like loud and rambunctious, and the people from Bogota are not as like cheery, just because it's cold there, it's up in the mountains. So in a way, we're a little bit more similar to like people from the Andes than like people from the Caribbean, even though Colombia is like in the middle, smack in the middle of them. So I think I'm a little bit more like reserved, whereas people from other parts are like just so fun and like doors are always open and everyone knows each other, and we're more like, no. So I'm a little more like that.
That is fascinating, because yeah, do you feel like you often get like pushed into the stereotype of being like this like warm, open, like Colombiana, like exotic, yeah, princess?
For sure. Oh, for sure. And like I have a lot of interactions and people are lovely about it, but they're like, oh my God, your accent. And I'm like, I don't speak like the telenovelas. It's a little bit different. Like, we're kind of singy-songy, but I'm like, it's a little bit of a colder culture for sure. I think part of it is like being just like up in the mountains where it's a little chilly all the time, as opposed to just like in the tropics having a blast. So
right. Not everyone's like hanging outside, getting to know each other.
Yeah. And I definitely have friends from like Barranquilla, Cartagena. And it's different. It's more just kind of like a little bit more just, again, open doors everywhere, people knowing each other, more just kind of like, let's always have fun, which like we're a little bit different.
I think that's so cool to like just hear more about the different complexities within even a country, because, you know, especially in the US, Latinidad gets made into like this one stereotype. I'm going to call it a stereotype, but maybe it's a trope. Where it's like this one view, and that's the view that a lot of Americans have. And so even I love talking about like the differences within the culture, because I feel like they're so overlooked all the time, and it's so frustrating for everyone.
I mean, we are so different. And again, like people from Argentina and Mexico, sure, there's like there's language, there's, you know, being colonized. There's a lot of things that are there that we all have in common. But at the same time, like, each country is so different, too, and like has so many little special things going on. So it's hard to talk about Latin culture without being like, but wait, there's so many little things. Hold on. Instead of like Latin, it's not just like, it's not like Italian or something where you're like, well, that's one country. Like, it's like saying European. You're talking about a bunch of different places there, you know, so.
Yes, yes. It's like saying North American, where it just starts to get a little bit too broad, you know. And I definitely agree with that. Now that we are past Latin Heritage Month, I feel like we can look back, but it's like during that month, all these brands or even just like everyone on social media is talking about Latin Heritage Month. But it's so broad that it's so hard to like say anything meaningful and still stay like general, because it's just too broad of a month. So, and I feel like that's how the Latin America gets treated all the time. It just gets like, but it's so many countries. Like, how can we do that?
Exactly. And even just like people that grew up in the United States are so different too. Like, again, it's just hard to talk about because we have so many things that really do connect us. But at the same time, I think it's important to kind of always make people aware that there are differences. For example, my husband works with a guy from Puerto Rico, and oftentimes he's asked to like do things for like everyone that's Latin. And he was like, I'm from Puerto Rico. Like, we speak differently. We have different things. Like, Mexican culture is really different. Mexican American culture has its own like set of different things. So he oftentimes has to be like, hold on, like, can we get another person, at least from a different country or someone that was born here or something, to talk about things? Because it's just like, he's not like the Latin guy, you know?
I know. And I feel like that happens all the time. If you're like Latina or Latino in the workplace, it's like you become kind of the token go-to person. And it's like, wait, now I'm representing like the entire continent, like, and Central America and the Americas as a whole. Like, this is a lot of pressure that's definitely underestimated. So if you're watching and your family is also from Bogota or from Colombia, I would love it if you could drop a Colombia flag in the comments on YouTube or whatever. I want to know who from Colombia is listening to us. And, you know, maybe you're warm and fuzzy and, you know, or maybe not.
maybe you'll be like, absolutely not. I don't agree with her whatsoever. So
yes, let's fight in the comments. No, I'm kidding. Okay, so what then brought you to the U.S.? I'm assuming it was like school, right? Because I think you mentioned that. But give me a little bit more color, because I know that there's a lot of people who listen and think about coming to the U.S., consider it. And I just like to show people the different ways that people approach coming here.
Okay. Well, so my dad has actually lived here forever. My parents are divorced and my dad moved to America when I was 3. So I would always just kind of spend the summers with him. And then when I was 17, my mom and my sister and my stepdad were like, we're going to move to Canada. You can either move with us and finish high school there or move with your dad. And I was like, oh, wait, I've never actually lived with my dad. It could be so fun. And also at the time, my dad was just like so much more established, whereas I knew that if we moved, you kind of have to start again in many ways. And I was like, well, he has like a sweet house in Florida. I think this is like, and it also seemed like American high school would be so much easier than Canadian one. So I was like, I think I want a little break.
Easier in what sense? Culturally or academically?
Academically. Like, yeah. I don't know why. I just assume that, even though now I feel like I don't think it's going to be that incredibly different from Canada, but I just thought I've killed myself for so long in school and I don't really want to start over with them. I'd rather just like move into my dad's like cushy life, if you will. So I moved to Florida and finished high school there.
Can I ask what part of Florida? Because I'm from Florida too, and I had no idea about this.
Yeah, I'm from, he used to live in Naples. So the Southwest. So kind of different, very kind of like country club life, if you will.
Yes, that is Naples is like old people love it there, like retirement, snowbirds. It's pretty though.
It's so nice. I just feel like you're either those people or the people that work for them. And my dad had a restaurant, so very much like the kind of person that worked for other people and like waited for them in the winter when it got cold. And yeah, just lots of old people, but beautiful beaches, kind of like sleepy, but again, it was fine for kind of just finishing up. And then when I wanted to go to school, obviously school in America is so expensive in comparison to most places.
University level.
Yes. So then I decided to go to school in Toronto to OCAD, which is like the art school there, which is, I loved it. It was awesome. But then after Toronto, I was like, I don't know if like there's enough happening in Canada for now. So I decided to move to New York. And I don't know why my parents were like, that seems fine. You don't have anything lined up, but just go do it.
Because you're young, you have nothing to lose, and they know it. And especially if they themselves are people who move, it's not so shocking, right? Your mom did that move, your dad did that move. To them, it's like, this is the era where you start making those big moves.
I guess, but I had like $1,100 and again, nothing lined up. So they were very kind to just be like, sure, go ahead and figure it out.
Yes, but that's what people do in New York too. Like, because New York moves so fast that it is like you could get an interview and a job in 1 week. You know, it could be that fast. So that's the kind of stuff that like New York is known for, and I'm glad you were able to make it work. Wow, I can't believe you moved so much, especially internationally. That's like a lot. It makes a lot of sense that you went to Naples, though, because if you were spending summers with your dad, then it's like, okay, I'd rather do that than like move to an entire other new culture that I haven't really been exposed to. So,
and yeah, at the time it was just like he had this like beautiful house, and again, it just seemed so much easier as opposed to like, I don't even know, like, as much as now I feel like I'm very familiar with Canada because I've lived there, I have family there, it seems like, okay, that's fine. But I was just like, I have no idea what it's going to be like. And I've been to this other house a million times, and this relatively small town. It's not a small town. It's a small city. But to me, coming from Bogota, it was like this little beach town thing. it was like, okay, this is so easy. I can kind of handle this a lot more. So
perfect. And when you were in Colombia, since you had this like bicultural experience, what was your perspective of the U.S. as someone from Bogota? I'm always curious to know because I only see the U.S. as someone who lives here, right? So I'm like, this, you know, this is cool, I guess. And to me, everything is about the U.S. because I live here. So everything that I consume is U.S. based. So I'm like, what was your perspective like? I'm dying to know.
Well, I guess it's changed a lot during the years as I've lived here. But when I was growing up, it almost seemed like a playground. Like it seemed like things were like easier and more fun. And also because my parents were divorced, I feel like my dad just kind of like made it all be so awesome. So it was like junk food all the time, watching movies. A lot of it was in the summer. So it was just kind of like all the summer things you could think of. So that was kind of the idea I had. It was like just fun land, you know, theme parks, just like the excess of like popular culture that the U.S. exudes, you know, it's just like, it's like the place that entertains the world. Like, at least that's what I thought. You know, it was just like, again, like everything that was just kind of like fun was here, basically. Not that it wasn't fun to be in Colombia. It's beautiful and it was really exciting. It was just like, just too, like all of it at once kind of a thing.
Yes, yes. I mean, that's kind of how I always feel like the U.S. is, where it's like, we kind of expect everyone else to be consuming American culture all the time. Like that's my assumption, is like everyone knows things that are American. But then I'm like, wow, that is so rude because we don't really consume things from other countries, right? Like I know certain Chilean things because my mom watched it in the house, but otherwise, like I would be completely, you know, I don't know what's going on in Colombia.
No, I know. It's like, yeah. And it also just happens everywhere. So I used to kind of take offense of like, why don't people know anything about Colombia? And now I'm like, because they don't, like, no one ever gets exposed to a lot of things unless you seek them out individually and like you travel a lot and you read and you're interested. Just kind of by being here, you will not get any kind of...
No, you don't get exposed to anything like foreign really here. Except like the blockbuster foreign movies. That's it. Like, but not even TV. I feel like, I think the most foreign TV I watch is like British TV.
Yeah, exactly. Like Irish is the new, like, ooh, the weird.
Yes,
one.
You're so right. Irish is like the new, like, yeah. Oh, I'm into like culture. It makes me laugh because my boyfriend is Irish. So whenever I have it on, I'm like, look, we're learning about your people. But it's like a random, you know, Dairy Girls or whatever. So what did you end up graduating with? I know I'm hearing a lot of different things. So I'm like, wait, let's double check. It's time for a little break to remind you that if you want to listen to the extended version of this episode, consider joining the Draws in Spanish Patreon. On the Draws in Spanish Patreon, you can access exclusive rewards like joining our Discord community, joining our co-working sessions, listening to extended episodes, and so much more. If that sounds good to you, then head on over to patreon.com/drawsinspanish to join. Now, if you don't have the means to join the Patreon, I totally understand and no pressure. But remember, you can support the show for free by subscribing to the show on YouTube, following the show on Spotify or Apple, and just sharing an episode with your friends. Thanks again for your support. Now let's get back to today's show.
So I have a BFA in printmaking, which, again, was so fun. It was a really small class, and I'm really, really grateful that I got to use everything because printing presses are crazy, and there's not a lot of, like, unless you have, like, a a printing studio where you do stationery carts or like a fine art or something, then it's not that easy to kind of be around that. So I'm really happy that I got to learn about all the different techniques and like acid baths and lithography and just printing in really amazing spaces, but also just really kind of taking advantage of that in school and then outside doing a lot more kind of illustration-based work.
Wow. I think that degree is so versatile. Even though you learn like very specific skills, they're so easily like applicable to other types of design. And I think because printmaking, so I don't know that much, right? So excuse me if I get anything wrong, but to me, printmaking it can be fine art, but it also can be commercial, right? Because you can make a set of posters, you can make like, you know, just like advertisements, like that kind of stuff. So it does have that versatility. And it's so fun to be able to learn those like traditional techniques that unless you have access to, it's really hard to learn like lithography on your own.
I don't know how you can start. Like maybe you can do like a lino cut at home, but there's just some things that I'm like, their printing press is like 500 pounds and everything is costly and kind of so time, like there's just a lot going on with it. But yeah, I know friends that have like publication studios where they print like zines and posters and like cool artist books. And then I have friends that do more digital stuff. So like really intense printing for like huge companies. So yeah, applications can be kind of everywhere. And then of course I have friends that like, were like, I don't want to do any of this. I'll go into HR or whatever. So yeah.
Yeah. I love it. I think, yeah, it's such a cool in between. And I love that you were like, I love that you were just flexible enough, adaptable enough to pursue like this degree, despite the fact that you were like, oh, illustration is in the design school, but like, I can't get over there. So how do I like make it work for me? And you definitely did. And I feel like that shows tenacity and just like, you know, being able to iterate on the skills that you're learning in school and still using them in your own way. I think that's something that like can't be taught, but like when you're creative, you just like have it in you to keep going and figure out how you want to use it. So that's really smart. And hopefully there's printmakers currently listening to us who are like, I don't know why I'm getting this degree. And then it's like, no, you can make it work.
Yeah, you can graduate and then rethink a lot of things. Don't worry. It applies to multiple things that you like, whatever you're going to school for. That's what I always think too. Like, don't worry so much if you're kind of like stuck in a degree you don't like, or maybe aren't sure what to do. You can always figure out a lot more afterwards too. Don't worry.
Yeah. In the moment, it feels very much like you're in this box and you have to like, there's only one way. But then the minute you get out, you're like, oh, we can just do whatever. Like nobody's like triple checking like what your degree is. If you have the talent, you have the talent. And I think that's something that people forget. So I know at some point, you went over to Bandeau to become a designer there. So can you tell me about that time? And like, I know you ended up becoming creative director at Bandeau. So like, fill in those gaps for me, because I feel like people, especially aspiring artists, creative director seems like the ultimate title, right? And so it's like, how do you even go from someone who's a designer or who's an illustrator or a photographer, whatever it may be, to creative director? That's like a really big jump.
I started doing freelance things for Bandeau initially. They work with tons of artists and designers. I think right before I did those first illustrations, they kind of had made the decision of like, we really want to empower artists. We really want to work with as many people as possible. So I did some freelance projects with them initially. And then in 2019, they had a call for a position. And I was like, oh, my God, like, yes, 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 yes. I just remember being like, sometimes when you look at job postings, you're like, I have no idea how to do that part. But I know this really well. This one was just like, oh, this is so perfect. They needed somebody that kind of understood apparel in a way. And I had worked in apparel, but also just kind of like the Bandeau world. And it's like, well, I've drawn for them. I understand. I kind of knew the people that were there, like a lot of the people that used to work there I had already met before. So it just seemed like this seems really good. We wanted to make a move out of New York at the time, so we were looking at different options. Initially, my husband has like the real job in the household. So I always thought, well, whatever he gets, he's kind of like the one that's going to be more in charge of where we go, depending on what kind of job he gets. And then I actually ended up getting this job. And I was like, well, if you get something in LA, I think we should consider this. And he happened to like just find a job fairly quickly, which was great. And then we moved here, and I initially started working as a product design manager. So under the creative director, kind of like making sure that like everything that was product based was well designed and executed. And then our creative director left, and I was like, well, I feel like I can do this. If you're interested, let me show you. Let me like give me a chance and see what we can do. And then that was my position for like 2 years. So it worked out pretty well. And it was fun. It was so fun, kind of like, again, trying to build that world.
Yes, that's so impressive. I feel like people who are illustrators or artists kind of think that the corporate world is not for them or doesn't have a place for them. And I think your story really shows that you can thrive in a corporate environment. I mean, it has its pros and its cons, just like freelancing has pros and cons. But there are skills that you can develop and learn and take with you and grow. And you're like a really good example of that, right? Like going from printmaking to more apparel design and I'm going to say like surface design, and then, you know, going into product design management, that makes like, it doesn't seem like an obvious move when you just like see the titles plainly, right? You're like, how did that happen? But when you see like the kind of work that you were doing at each place, it really like becomes obvious how you set yourself up for success. And now I can see it so clearly in the kind of work that you do today, because you have your own style, but at the same time, you still have this knowledge of like patterns and colors and design, and it really kind of all comes together. So I just love when I see something like that, because I know that when I was in school, it seemed so far-fetched and like so impossible to kind of see like a trajectory for yourself. So it's just so cool to see how other people are doing it. So you've been able to work with so many other clients aside from your time at Bando. I know your client list, I'm going to name drop here. Your client list includes Google, HBO, Target, Bando, Allbirds, Chobani, which I love Chobani, Samsung, Chunks, so many other things. So which one of those projects made you feel like, wow, I made it. I am doing the thing that I always wanted to do.
I'm not sure. I feel like every time I'm like, oh, thank God, one more client. Like, I'm still kind of like, oh, okay, like, let's see what happens next week, you know?
The phone's still ringing. Okay, mm-hmm. Amazing.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like part of like working, like just kind of there's been such different experiences, and the products that have come out are so different that I feel like I'm just happy to kind of have been a part of it with each and every one of these. And there's a lot of other clients that are not like so cool and flashy, but it's just like, oh, this was so fun. I'm so glad I got to work on this kind of a thing. So I feel like Allbirds was awesome because it was also kind of like for a cause, which not a lot of like some brands kind of have that in their minds, but I feel like Allbirds is like fully into like being carbon neutral, not even carbon negative at this point, I think. So that was really great. And then just having like so much freedom. Target was like, I still get so many messages, and that was so rewarding to see that and just be able to, you know, be a part of so many different people's lives. It kind of brings me to tears once a week still thinking about that. So just, I don't even know so many.
Okay. No, I know you have so many. So I know that this was going to be hard, but let's talk about your Target collection. Or your collection with Target, because that's really recent and it's beautiful. And so I want to know, like, here's what I want to know from you, Daniela. How was it when they wrote you? How was the process? Now you already told me how it feels when people connect with you about the collection, but walk me through it, because I think for a lot of people, including myself, this is like a dream client, especially because it's a brand that's like really beloved here in the US. Like, everyone really likes going to Target. It's like in people's everyday life.
Yes, for sure. For sure. So, I like when I got the email, I was like, I don't know. This is like too good to be true. I'm not sure. And then also, you just kind of never know the full scope of things, which is kind of like, what am I gonna be doing? It seems like a lot. And also, like, every step is just like, okay, let's wait and see. Because then it was like, please send us a quote. And I was like, well, I'll quote you fairly, but also, like, what do you want from me? There's like so much to do. And then working with them was so freaking amazing. The team was so kind, but also just like really on it, giving feedback on time, which sometimes people like, I get there's a million things going on. So I feel like one of the biggest struggles I have is people not being able to reply on time. So then everything gets kind of sidetracked or deadlines get pushed, but they were so lovely. Kind of giving feedback that was really kind of relevant without it being like, everything sucks, you need to start over again. It was just like,
We
okay,
like
let's.
it, but can you make it pop? And you're just like,
Yeah.
what?
Yeah. Like, I don't know what that means. It was really kind of like concrete feedback and then just kind of like so pleasant to work with too. Like, really, I think it's because they're so organized. They just have a clear idea of what they want and it's easy to kind of convey that as opposed to people that are like, so.
Right. Yeah. Because they are a big brand and they have so many people. So many teams working together. It's like I'm sure they're way more on it than other places, especially when you consider like retail timelines having to be kind of like you have to be on it, right? You can't just like push it another month. I love to hear that you had a great experience working with them, but I love knowing that even when they were emailing you, you were like, "What's going on?" Like, and like, what do you mean? And what do you want from me? And you know, because I think it's so funny when you get like a big brand like this that even still every step of the way you're kind of like are we okay? Like did it pass? Like is this still happening? Because there is it does feel like it can be taken from you or something until it's like out there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then also, like part of working on something that is very personal is at the same time, like, is this what they want? Because I know that they hire me to like do a certain thing, but is it gonna be
Is
okay?
it this? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like hitting the mark, especially when we're talking about a Latin Heritage Month collection, which like we were talking about before, Latinidad is such, it's so broad that it can be kind of intimidating to walk into this kind of project because you're like, I don't know what version of Latina you have in your mind. So can you tell me about that experience, like brainstorming for them? Because that would be my biggest fear. It would be like, is this Latina enough for you? And I love your collection because it's patterns, it's playful, it's not necessarily super stereotypical.
Oh yeah, for sure. I feel like they had a very clear idea of what they wanted me to do. So that was again really easy. It was like we want certain patterns and I was like, "Okay, here's, a bunch of different sketches. What do you kind of want to go from there?" So I feel like it's really like the reason my stuff is in so many different products is 'cause it's so easy to just kind of like plug a pattern into many different things. So I think kind of nailing that was crucial. And then I guess I never thought about like, is this Latino enough or not? 'Cause I was like, it's gonna be freaking colorful 'cause that's just like inevitable for me. Like every time I have to work with a client that's a little bit more like they've described themselves as more masculine or sophisticated, I'm like, okay, but we still need a little bit of pink or like you need one little pop or something. So I wasn't kind of too worried about that. I guess the part where I kind of made more decisions was kind of like, how do I interpret what they said and make it be so cute? And for example, a lot of it was like, there's a lot of Spanglish phrases, which I was like, I feel more comfortable with either or. I guess if it's Latin, let's just do like full Spanish. But I know, for example, Jackie, who you also talked to, she did one that's in Spanglish, and it's so cool because then like different people get to buy it. If something that's fully in Spanish resonates more with you, then you can buy my little baby onesie, and then somebody like I think her shirt says "Proud de mi cultura," which I'm like, that's so cool that there's just different options too. And I think part of what makes the collection so stunning too was that they collaborated with people that had such different approaches to everything, approaches to their Latinidad, but also aesthetic approaches. So I think it just looks so cool. And when you walked into a Target or saw it online, it just was like, whoa, there's something for everyone. So I thought that was so cool.
Yes, I love that you mentioned that because, yeah, your patterns for them are very much you. Like the minute I saw them, I'm like, oh, this must have been the perfect collaboration for her because it's just like your work that you probably would have made even on your own, made into a collection, and it's beautiful. And I love what you say about like, yeah, having something for everyone, because I think actually you and I talked about this in our DMs was like, Spanglish is like a very hot topic because I think a lot of people who identify as like maybe second generation or like first generation, but lived here a majority of their life, feel really comfortable with Spanglish. And then there's other people who it feels really foreign to. And that's really hard, especially when you're doing something like a Latinx Heritage Month collection. I personally don't identify with Spanglish because to me, it was like I'm either talking in Spanish with my mom or I am talking in English with everybody else. There's not really this middle ground that I've never really experienced it. And how do you feel like about Spanglish in general, not even related to this?
I feel the same as you, basically. I feel like the people that speak Spanish in my life speak Spanish. And then there's everyone else kind of a thing. So I do think my sister and I kind of like go back and forth, and it's strange because she doesn't live here. She lives in Montreal. That's mostly French speaking, but I think it's because it's like our little thing. And now she wants to be including my husband who doesn't speak Spanish, but every other person that I don't have a lot of contact with people that are kind of like interwoven. It's kind of either or. So I have friends who only speak English, like the majority of my friends here only speak English. And then I have friends that are like just people from other parts of Latin America that just feel really comfortable in Spanish. So I haven't had a chance to kind of like have it be as part of my life as much. So to me, I'm just like, no, either or. But I understand, like, I have a lot of, for example, Chicano friends, and they're kind of like, no, it's like you kind of weave back and forth, and that's the way it is. And that's like kind of like comfortable or like familiar. But for me, it would feel really forced. That's kind of like what I gather from it. So when I get briefs, I'm like, I guess I'll just do the phrase in Spanish because it doesn't feel natural to me. But I also think that in other households, it just is like, yeah, like we grew up kind of like half and half. I didn't grow up half and half. I grew up like speaking Spanish my whole life. And then kind of like having to go to school or like hang out with my friends in English. There wasn't like ever a middle point.
Yes, yes. I think that's like a really fascinating kind of part of the culture because I feel the same, but I grew up here. It's just that in my little bubble in my house, it was like Spanish only, almost like a punishment. The few friends that I do have that speak both, I do go in and out of it, but it would feel weird to write in it. It wouldn't feel like myself. So I think that's fascinating. And I love knowing that there's just like different ranges. And I definitely don't shame on either one because both have their place and both of them are relevant to like what's going on today, right? To say no to Spanglish is crazy because in this world that we're in, it's like very much here to stay. I just love like getting into the ins and out of it because I do think that sometimes brands tend to do that as like a lazy way to do it, right? Like they'll be like, you know, it's September 15th or yeah, September 15th. And they'll be like, hola, you know, for the first time ever. And you're like, what's happening?
Yeah, exactly. Like you can't do it. Like, I just don't want it to ever feel performative. I guess that's what it comes down to. So yeah, anything that just kind of becomes performative, like, yeah, I don't really want DirecTV talking in Spanish all of a sudden just for like the little bit of time. I do want like other things about it that are wonderful. But just as long as it feels like genuine to you, then yeah, for sure. Like I said, like maybe the t-shirt I made for Target it doesn't connect to many people as the other one, but that's why it's so cool to have both of them, because then you can have your pick, you know? So, yeah, as long as I feel like that just kind of should apply to anything, like brands, it's hard because you want to be relevant. Like, I've worked at a brand. I know you're trying, and I know there's people trying and like wanting to be relevant and cool and like get into like the latest meme so you can be a part of it and all of that. But at the same time, sometimes there's just a thin line between being too performative and like trying too hard to be like funny and cute when it's like, oh, it doesn't feel as cool as like when my buddy did it or something. So,
right, right. I mean, I think that's what's cool about the Target collection is that they tapped into people, into creatives who genuinely have a connection to Latinidad versus when a brand kind of on their own decides to do like, use a Spanish word in the campaign, you know, and it's like, what's going on? But something that is funny to me, which I'm like, let's talk about it is the question, just like during Heritage Month, obviously, but also just in general, I think this is a good thing. A good and interesting thing is like the question of like, what does being Latina mean to you? And I'm sure, not only you and I, but any other artists who are Latinx have been faced with this question during the Heritage Month, and it always feels very broad and weird. So why does that question feel confusing to you?
Well, I think because there's so many ways you can be a Latin person. And at the same time, I was born this way. It's like, I identify as a female. I've always thought of myself as that. All of a sudden, why? Like, it would be the same as asking me, like, so how does it feel being a woman? I guess the only way I've ever known how to feel, in a way, you know? So I think it gets a little bit hard to answer that when it's like, well, that's my whole identity. I don't know what else to say other than being Latin is very cool and fun, and you get to, like, again, be part of different cultures. So I'm very kind of like into the same things my husband, who was never into Latin culture, was for a long time. And now we have things in common. But at the same time, I'm also very like in tune with like the culture, the language. Again, I think I have had many conversations about this, and like, being colonized is very different. Like, being colonized in the 1500s versus like the pilgrims coming two centuries later. It's like a very different approach to life. So you have like a lot of like religious things that are also kind of like intermixed, the language, similar approach to cuisine. So I think that's kind of like what people have in common. But at the same time, I'm like, it's who I am. Like,
and it's so different for everyone that answering a question like that just feels like, yeah, just way too broad and way too like, I don't know what kind of answer you want, because my answer is just like, I don't know anything else. So I guess this is just like a memo for future, any campaign managers there thinking about asking this question, to maybe ask it differently, because it does feel very patronizing in the sense of like, you want me to say like, I'm Latina because I love my abuela. Like, they want you to say something very like, si se puede, which is, I agree, like, you should love your abuela and you can do whatever you want. But it feels like a punchline that they're waiting for. And it can be very tricky because the punchline is like your life.
Yeah, that's, I think you nailed it with just saying that. It's like, well, that's part of just life. I don't know. I feel like it's like asking someone that just kind of identifies as white, like, what do you feel about that? Do you love Thanksgiving more than any other holiday? It's like, well, maybe, maybe not, but it's okay, you know? Like, also, it's also okay to love Thanksgiving if you come from any other part of the world and delight on some pumpkin pie and cornbread or something, you know? So I think it's just kind of like, I want to bring people into the conversation when I talk about it, but at the same time, like, it's just, I don't want to be just identified as that. I am a person and I have a lot of different interests and different, like, my background enriches that. But at the same time, it's not just like all that I am.
Yes. And I think during like Latinx Heritage Month, sometimes there's a fine line between being empowered and being tokenized. And it's very confusing throughout the month because you're like, wait, are you using me or am I empowered? And this goes for like everything ever. It's not just, this is not about any certain brand. It's just in general, I feel like during that month, it can always be a little confusing because of the fine line that we're balancing. And I know like you and I feel very much on the side of like, I don't want to be tokenized. This is just who I am. And I want to talk about it. But I don't want to be narrowed, defined by it necessarily. Because like you said, you can like Thanksgiving still.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think it's also, it's hard to talk about it because it's so recent. Like up until 2 years ago, this wasn't really a thing. But the way I see it too, maybe it's kind of like, we should always be celebrating this, same as we should always be celebrating Pride. And like, Pride also has a lot of performative things, or like a lot of people kind of, yeah, all the brands all of a sudden have rainbow flags and want to work with people. And it's kind of tricky now because it's so recent. But what I kind of take comfort with is that it maybe should just be part of our lives, just kind of like how Old Navy rolls out those 4th of July t-shirts every year. I would love to see something that kind of like speaks to Latinx culture or speaks to Pride or Juneteenth or something. Like, it's just a shame that like, it feels so kind of like patronizing now, but at the same time, if we kind of keep at it, it just becomes the norm, just like the way you would celebrate any other holiday. And I think these kind of moments in different cultures do merit a celebration. So it's a little bit of a weird ground to walk on now, but I hope it just becomes like the norm and you always kind of like get to showcase different cultures.
Getting back to your work, because we got a little deviated there. You do like create a lot of patterns and illustrations. Do you prefer making patterns or like designing and illustrating patterns or illustrating like editorial illustrations? Because when I look at your work, they're very woven together, but at the same time, there are like two different types of illustration work that you're putting out there. So I'm just curious if you have a preference.
No, not really. I guess it just depends on the project and if it's right for me or not. I feel like sometimes, maybe a few years ago, I would just take any job, even though I knew starting off that like the client and I were not on the same page. And I kind of just wanted to kind of A, learn as much as I could and prove to myself I could do it, and B, just get anything. So there would be a struggle with like, you want me to do like, I don't know, like a graffiti print or something. It's like not something I'm good at, or like I could do it. It's just not going to be enjoyable. So as long as the client kind of comes to me with like something in mind that I'm good at, I enjoy both of them equally. It just kind of, yeah, makes sense to have it be something that I'm already good at, as opposed to like making me do like, for example, menswear is really kind of like more muted and more serious in a way. And like lots of, when I used to work in apparel, it was a lot of stripes and like plaids. I don't really kind of want to do a bunch of that. So I think it just depends on like if the client comes to me with an idea of like, we love this illustration or this pattern, can you make something that's an update? That's when it kind of like, it's just fun either way.
Nice, nice. Yeah. I mean, whenever a client comes to you with a brief that you're like, did you even look at my portfolio? That never feels good. So I totally get what you mean there.
And it's hard when you're a little baby and just want to do it. But at the same time, I feel like if there's any advice that somebody might need younger, it's like, just kind of stick to what you're good at. It will be so much better. You'll be so much happier. And again, I think the outcome will be so much better too.
Yeah, I think you're so right. Especially when you're just starting off, you do think you have to know everything. Like you have to be able to do everything. And it's like, no, the more you look at it, the more like specific every artist gets in their career, the more they just like do one thing really well. But it is hard in the beginning because you're just trying to balance and make a living at the same time. And what software or tools do you use to create your patterns? I know I've had listeners just want to know a little bit more like technical stuff.
Yeah, I mostly draw on Procreate most of what I do. And then I clean it up, make it be the thing it is on Illustrator. So sometimes I know a lot of publications prefer kind of JPEGs, so it doesn't really matter. But then most of the time when you're using things for products or you're going to print them hire REST or something than Illustrator. So I feel like those are kind of my go-tos, just Procreate. Sometimes I do kind of like hand sketching initially and then clean it up. And then Illustrator is kind of like what I like to work with for the final result.
Interesting. And do you use Illustrator with an iPad or with a Wacom or with anything in specific? Or are you just using your mouse? I know some people do that.
I've worked with a Wacom for the past like 12 years. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I love to hear that because a lot of people are like, oh, I need the iPad. And obviously the iPad's really good with Procreate and with Adobe Fresco and whatever, but you don't have to. If you have a Wacom, you can still get by. So, you know, that's good to know.
Well, it's hard. I feel like I still, even before the iPad days, I would do everything by hand because the Wacom has like a very particular way of working, I guess. So I don't really like drawing straight. Like, I don't think I could ever do a project just with the Wacom. But at the same time, I love having my little setup has always been the Wacom and the mouse next to it, too. So I kind of rely on both of them. But initially, like, I think what's so great about the iPad is that it almost feels like a sketchbook. And the pen, with the different brushes, you can kind of, like, manipulate it however you want. But then the Wacom is just kind of, like, for the finishing touches. And it's just a little bit easier for me to draw things as opposed to working just with a mouse. Or some people work with a trackpad, too, which that seems even harder for me.
Got it. Ooh, I just love, like, being a nerd and, like, I want to know how everyone's doing stuff so I can figure out like what should I add or what should I take away, you know?
Oh, I love it too. Yeah.
Do you have any advice for someone interested in getting into surface pattern or textile design? I don't know which word is it? I don't even know. Like someone who wants to get started selling patterns but has never done it before. Like I've made patterns before. I had no idea that I could sell them until recently. So do you have any tips for someone who's looking to get into this, having not had studio experience or that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think the hardest part with that is making sure that your work is commercial enough, because if you want to get into that kind of industry, you have to make sure that it's stuff that you're seeing out there. And it's not like, oh, I saw it at this like cute niche market I like. It's more just kind of like, if you want to make a career out of it, you have to be aware of like what's going on in the world of like big fashion, big interiors, because that's kind of like what's going to make it be profitable for you. So it's a little bit hard if you want to do something that's like super specific. But if you're really good at drawing florals or really good at like more kind of like commercial illustration, then it's just kind of like a great tool to keep. You know, just kind of like selling your art and like making tons of art, because you will need to make so many different iterations. So if that's something that is kind of fun, then that's great. If you want to do something that's really unique and niche, then maybe I wouldn't recommend this as much. I feel like that's harder. Like you don't really see a lot of like specific little prints out in the world. If you think about it, you kind of see like florals every season or just kind of like things that stripes. Are more just kind of like, yeah, like commercial
gingham,
and fun.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. Yeah, I think the collections that I've seen with artists have always been like that artist's work as a pattern. But it's always an artist that kind of already works either abstractly or has like, I guess abstract style that can be, or a style that can be abstracted, because otherwise it might not work like on a towel or something if it's like very not repeatable, or like it's repeatable but it's not, doesn't look great.
And like if you think about the cool, like if you collaborate with an artist and they're more kind of like draw people or something like that, you can have one-off versions of that, but like there's not like, unless it's like New Works or something, which is a really fun brand, a lot of the time you can have one-off in a collection that's that, and then the rest just have to be more kind of commercial things that you kind of expect the apparel world to have.
Got it. And if there was one brand that you could create a pattern for, like what brand would be your dream to collaborate with?
Oh my God. I have so many.
Top number one, pretend they're listening right now.
I really like this place called Number Six Store. I feel like all the stuff they come out with is always so beautiful. They're really well known for their shoes and little clogs. But when they make clothes, they're always stunning. So maybe that. But also, like, anyone who's interested and likes my style, please email me too.
Yes, I feel like I'm manifesting this for both of us, but I feel like your work could really work with Bagu.
Oh, I love, I mean, everything they do is so stunning.
Because like, they use a ton of so really fun. Colorful patterns. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, instant.
And cool, unique things too. They're amazing.
Yeah, I could see them working for you. Okay, last couple questions here, Daniela. What's your favorite Colombian saying, if you had one?
Oh my God, there's so many.
I know. It's kind of a hard question.
Well, okay, I will say it's not a saying, but we use the word charity, which is cool, I guess, all the time. And I feel like when I speak to people of other countries, I'm like, I try to be mindful of like, maybe they won't understand this, or like, this has a double entendre in another country, but I'm like, I'm never getting rid of my charity. So I feel like maybe not a saying, but just kind of like, that's such a, and Venezuelans have it too, and other countries say, but like, we just like, everything is charity for us. So
it's an iconic Colombian word in your vocabulary. Okay. Yeah, for I love sure. it. And then if you have to pick one favorite Colombian food,
I guess arepas.
Arepas, always. Oh, I miss arepas so much. And then what's one thing from Colombia, like cultural, it can be food, but I was thinking more cultural, that you wish was more common in the U.S.?
Yeah, there's lots. I guess we just have like a little bit of a stronger feeling of community. Sometimes American society can feel a little bit like individualistic, and it's like, well, let's kind of think about this. If we're all in it together, then maybe the outcome will be better for all of us. And sometimes I do miss that. Not saying that Colombia is a perfect country. It's obviously not. It's going through a lot. But I feel like there's just like less of an individualistic culture. So I do miss that.
Yeah, for sure. I know. Here it's very individualistic, for better and for worse. Well, Daniela, that's all I wanted to ask you. Thank you so much for giving me your time, for giving me your wisdom, sharing so much about your career. Thank you. And that's all. That's it.
Oh, my God. Well, thank you so much. This was so fun. I was looking forward to talking to you. I feel like, again, I know you. Like, I could just like sit here and talk more. It's like, let's go grab some coffee now. So thank you.
That would be amazing. All right, everyone, that's all I have for you today. That was today's amazing conversation with Daniela Jordan Villaveses, a creative director and illustrator currently based in Los Angeles. Be sure to follow her work on Instagram at Libritos, or click the link in the show notes. I'm going to leave all her links down below, so be sure to check out her work. Now, before you go, before you X out of this episode, I need to remind you to subscribe to the show if you like this episode. So subscribing is free and something you can do to really help out the show, to support the show. Now, if you want to connect with other Latinx artists in our Draws in Spanish community, then head on over to my Patreon so you can join our Discord channel and get extended episodes of this episode. So that's all I have for you. Hasta la próxima, amigos. Nos vemos el próximo martes. Muchas gracias por escuchar. Y nada, chao.